Welcome to American Indian Living, a program developed by the Native Education and Health Initiative to improve and enhance the health of people throughout the Native communities. American Indian Living is hosted by Dr. David DeRose, a board-certified specialist in both internal medicine and preventive medicine. Dr. DeRose has a wide range of experience with Native health issues, and he's ready today to help you learn more about your health. Here's Dr. DeRose.
Welcome to American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Today we're looking at a subject that really has the attention of people throughout Indian country. It's not a topic that is confined to Native Americans or First Nation peoples. In fact, it is a topic that really throughout the Western world is not only generating lots of interest, but is really generating lots of financial incentives for people to be involved in the diagnosis and treatment of these conditions. We're speaking about the subject of mental health today, and there are some growing concerns in many quarters that many of our approaches to mental health diagnosis and treatment may be far less than optimal. Today we want to look at some things that can make a difference if you or a loved one, someone in your community, perhaps someone on the reservation, someone in your tribal extended family is dealing with challenges. We're going to have some practical things that can be of help to you. I'm not going to be the expert today. I am here along for the ride as we bring in someone who is really making quite a bit of waves in the mental health community. His name is Dr. Timothy Scott. He is a psychologist and educator. Tim, it's great to have you with us on today's program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tim, I have been reading some of the things about your book. I've actually read a good portion of your book, America Fooled. And I know that it's, getting some amazing, positive press from people in the mental health community, but I know there's a lot of people that are not happy with what you've written. Just in a nutshell, what is America Fooled all about?
Yeah, basically I say that one of the greatest medical frauds of the 20th century, now the 21st century, is to convince people that their mental problems are due to some kind of a chemical imbalance in the brain, and if they take these drugs, it'll fix that problem. Without warning them of some of the health effects of those drugs, without making them aware of some of the problems with the theory. And because today in America and around the world, we have people who have been convinced, although it's uniquely an American problem, more than the rest of the world, and even physicians have become convinced for a number of reasons, which I could discuss. I titled the book America Fooled. I think that's what's happened.
So basically, we're looking at the whole area of mental health, and especially in your book, you focus on two main conditions, depression and what we call schizophrenia. I mean, at least from my read, depression takes the largest share of the book, but you also handle some of those, more, what some people would say, more major, devastating mental illnesses.
Yeah,
is that a pretty
divide the book into three parts, and one part deals just with the depression, another part with psychosis, schizophrenia. And then the third part is, how do you have good mental health if you don't do the drugs, if you don't do the antidepressants, if you don't do the antipsychotics? How do you have good mental health? And so I give the last third of the book, a little over 100 pages there, to that subject.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be the most exciting thing for our listeners. But we really want to lay that framework because, we've got we don't do mental health surveys of our listenership, Tim, but just looking at the statistics in America, there are no doubt thousands of people that are listening to this radio show who either are on drugs for mental health issues or have been on those drugs in the past or have family members or loved ones who are on these medications.
Yeah, it's incredible.
So this is really
1 in 10 women, 1 in 13 men. We now have over 30,000 children 4 years of age and under on antidepressants. Because, once a physician becomes a true believer that these drugs are the answer, and a child comes in and they seem not to be as bouncy as the next kid, you have a certain percentage of physicians who are willing to prescribe that drug. So now we have quite a few children on these drugs. And, of course, if you get into the adolescent years, we have lots of children on these drugs. So it is an important issue. I think many parents are not aware that the long-term research studies were not ever done to get these drugs approved. And so we're just now getting a more clear picture of what some of the health effects are from taking these drugs long-term. Parents need to know that. Physicians need to know that.
You know, one of the things that you spend a lot of time with in your book is something that, as a board-certified specialist in not only internal medicine but also preventive medicine, I have a deep interest in, and that is research methodology.
Yeah.
I'm not going to pass myself off as a high-tiered researcher, but I've published a few things in the peer-reviewed literature over the years, so I am aware of perhaps a little bit more intimately with some of the things that, go into research than some of my colleagues. But you really make this very practical for lay people, and I think it's interesting. Use an example that I've often used, and that's the whole story with the hormone replacement therapy in women. Maybe you can kind of give us a little background on why that's such a telling kind of case history, if you will, and then give us some lessons from that as we deal with mental health issues.
Yeah, I dealt with that one in part, David, because my own mother developed breast cancer, though she has no relatives who have ever had that condition, and at a fairly young age. And the question was, how did this happen? At the time, we didn't really realize, but she was on fairly high doses of estrogen. She was on Premarin, which was the number one drug of the 70s and had huge sales in the end of the 60s as well. And that drug was promoted heavily. Premarin is a name that comes from pregnant mare urine, and that's exactly where that estrogen comes from. The estrogen comes in many forms, and in that form, it was from pregnant mares. And so that was given to my mother. And, of course, women love the drug in some ways. They were told, of course, it'll keep them young. It'll keep them from getting as wrinkled, keep them from having osteoporosis, keep them from having heart disease. Lots of benefits. In reality, there are huge dangers. We used to not realize what the dangers were. It was not, in fact, until 2002 that some of the real risk became even more clear when we had some real conclusive studies published. But the risk include things like breast cancer, ovarian cancer, endometrial cancer, more heart attacks, not fewer, more strokes, not fewer, asthma. We now realize Alzheimer's is twice as likely for women with a history of estrogen use. Cognitive declines are real. So the point is there's some real health risk. Patients taking that drug were unaware of it. Physicians prescribing that drug were unaware of it. And so consequently, these drugs became very, very popular. They were promoted heavily, and the damage that could be done was just unknown. And that's not fair. People need to know what the risks are. There are some benefits, but what are the risks? And so that was not known. My mother got breast cancer. She's still alive. She survived that. She had to go through the radiation treatment to survive that. But she did survive that. I'm very thankful. But lots of women have not. And so I say there's a moral issue here. We need to be honest with people. We need to be very honest with the research. And that's not happening when you start talking about antidepressants and antipsychotics. It is incredible the lack of knowledge among physicians. I cite some of the surveys published by physicians in medical journals of other physicians' knowledge of this issue. And it's just incredible the lack of knowledge. And the average person taking these drugs does not know what some of those long-term risks are. And they're very real. And so my purpose in writing this book, my background basically is research design issues. So when I started looking at medical studies in this area, I found they were unique. When you go to research in other areas of medicine, you generally have very objective endpoints. So you can measure white blood cell counts. You can measure glucose levels. You can measure something objectively. That's not the case in this area, and consequently, these studies have been manipulated. The research designs are inferior. They, in fact, have been manipulated on purpose, and the end result has been, of course, antidepressants and antipsychotics together as a group. If you put those two together, that's our number one source of income for pharmaceuticals in America. That's the number one source. And, of course, it actually makes huge amounts of money for pharmaceuticals in other countries because they're not allowed to advertise these drugs. A lot of Americans don't realize we get these ads on television for these drugs. That's not legal in Germany, in France, in Italy, in Spain, in Brazil, in Mexico, in Canada. It's not legal. The only other country where that is allowed is New Zealand, and there's strong fights to end that there now, but it's allowed here. And so many of the European companies, the pharmaceuticals from Europe, they come here. GlaxoSmithKline advertises their drugs to Americans in a way they cannot do it in England. And so they make huge profits because advertising does work. Americans have become convinced, physicians have become convinced that these drugs are the answer. They're not, and that's the purpose of my book.
You know, the interesting thing about the whole premise, you know, the America fooled and coming back to the hormone replacement therapy parallels is, you know, a lot of people as they're listening, they might say, well, you know, here's a guy that's really angry, just trying to throw dirt at the American medical establishment and the pharmaceutical industry. And a lot of people are angry. They resonate with that message. But I don't see that's where you're coming from. And actually, the interesting thing about the whole hormone replacement therapy story is, you know, from my perspective as a physician, I was never sucked up in that because my orientation has always been more with natural and non-drug therapies. But a lot of my peers who were pushing the hormone replacement therapy, although I was uncomfortable with it, I felt that they were doing this in good conscience. It wasn't because they had stock in the drug companies. They were looking at, epidemiologic studies that just look at cross sections of people, and they were saying, you know, look at the people using the hormone replacement therapy. You know, these women are doing much better. And, you know, you point this out in your book, there's a problem with that kind of reasoning and that kind of research, isn't there?
Yeah, there sure is. In reality, research design is the critical issue. There is truth out there, and finding truth sometimes requires tremendous research design. It requires millions of dollars to get there. It's a very difficult thing when you start dealing with people and all the different habits in people's lives, etc. So it's very difficult. And in fact, we were fooled for many years. We really believed that it was a good idea from a health standpoint to take estrogen mm-hmm. because it reduced heart disease. Even though it increased cancer, the heart disease claimed more lives than the cancer did. And so we said, well, if you put those two on a scale, you actually have more people who survive by taking the drug than by not taking the drug, and it has other benefits, mm-hmm. so let's encourage its use. So that's kind of how we went at it. But, you know, one mm-hmm. of the things that people fail to recognize is, I think very often they think, well, it's got to be a safe drug because, after all, the FDA approved it. But we have so many drugs every year that are removed. We average about 45 what we call Class 1 recalls. We have recalls divided into Class 1, Class 2, Class 3. And Class 1 recalls are those life-threatening, serious damage to the body kind of recalls. Those are things like Fen-Phen and Bacol and Resulin and Ephedra and so forth. Those things that have actually caused people to die or have had serious damage to the body, permanent damage. And we average 45 a year in America. And so just because a drug's on the market, just because a drug is prescribed by your physician, believe me, David, your orientation says to me, you're a safer physician to go to because every drug has side effects, and it takes years to find out what some of those side effects are very often. In fact, only half of the serious adverse drug reactions, the ADRs, are detected and documented in the PDR, the physician's desk reference, within 7 years of the drug's approval. So any new drug, I say avoid. You wait until it's had a track record. If it's a life-threatening condition, you may want to go and take that risk. But basically speaking, hey, avoid the new drug. And if possible, do something that is more natural rather than taking a pharmaceutical-created drug that may have very harmful effects that we just don't know about yet.
You know, Dr. Scott, you remind me of one of my physiology teachers in my clinical years of medical school. He actually pointed out that there was one class of drugs that had no side effects. And he answered tongue-in-cheek, they were new drugs.
Yeah, right.
And
I have no idea what that class would be, but yes, okay, I see his point.
Yeah, and so for those of you that are missing the humor, he was making the point that Dr. Scott made in just a little different way. You know, when the new drug comes out, doctors have been told, well, you know, this doesn't have all the problems with all the drugs of the past. And the real problem, of course, is we just don't know what the problems are.
That's right.
So like Dr. Scott said, a lot of people in medicine today are saying, yes, you're better off with the tried and true drugs. If you feel you have to use a medicine, at least use one where, you know, thousands, millions of people have used it. We know what the side effects are. We know what to monitor for. We know if you're a bad candidate for it. Whereas
exactly.
with these new drugs, you know, you're basically part of the experimentation process.
Yeah, that's right.
We're going to be talking about some very practical information from Dr. Scott. If you already haven't sensed it, he's got some cutting-edge information. His book has got something like 1,800 references. He's not just a guy who, pulled a few press releases and threw this together in a book. Got some cutting-edge information about things you can do to help your mental health without using medications. It's exciting stuff. You don't want to go away. I'm Dr. David DeRose. You're listening to American Indian Living. Stay for a lot more.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
Today's American Indian Living radio program is sponsored in part by Wimar Center of Health and Education. Located in the foothills of Northern California's Sierra Mountains, Wimar is home to the residential New Start Lifestyle Program that helps people of all races address diabetes, heart disease, obesity, and related conditions. To further assist Native Americans with their health, Wimar produces a wealth of free resources that can be accessed on their website at newstartclub.com. To learn more about how Wimar can change your life, you can call 1-800-525-9192. The number again is 1-800-525-9192. Or you can access them on the web at newstartclub.com. Again, that's newstartclub.com.
Some important social statements by United States citizens today on policy.
To be a good American, you've got to like people, share things, and not scream at people. And you should also help them, and then you can share at them.
A statement on historical tradition and our form of government.
I love America because it got government full of people, and full of people, and full of people.
A statement on down-to-earth American idealism.
I like living in America because it means freedom. It means that you can do most stuff you want as long as it doesn't, like, hurt anybody, and you have to work hard to keep it.
America, a statement in summary.
I love America because everybody's equal. And when you play with other kids and they dunk you, you can dunk them back.
You're listening to a pre-recorded broadcast of American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is your host.
Welcome back to American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We're speaking today about an issue that has the attention of people throughout Indian country and throughout the Western world in particular. We're speaking with Dr. Timothy Scott. Dr. Scott is a PhD psychologist. He has special training and background in research design. He is a university educator. Dr. Scott, we're talking about your book, America Fooled, and talking about how really most of the medical profession in the Western world, especially in the United States, has bought into an approach to dealing with mental health issues like depression and psychosis, serious mental health disorders, that really leaves practitioners thinking they have to rely on prescription drugs to treat these conditions. Just with that bit of background, I know there are people who listen to the first segment and they're saying, well, you know, here's another guy who's spreading conspiracy theories. He's just trying to make a lot of money for himself. I think there's something very interesting about the proceeds from the sale of your book. Do you want to mention that to our listeners?
I'd be happy to. Yeah, I wanted to make sure that anyone who picked up that book knew that my motivation was nothing more than trying to increase knowledge, spread the truth. I decided before I began writing that I really needed to make sure that I didn't make a dime off the book, so I chose to give all profits to Habitat for Humanity. So anyone who buys a book is simply helping some family who needs a home. They're making a small contribution to that family because I don't get a penny for the book. All proceeds are given away. So, and I did that because, you know, really and truly, there are folks who write books and they do it to make money. And I did not want that to be seen as a possible reason for sharing these ideas, because they are controversial ideas. The other thing I did related to this is make sure I document every word I say. So you mentioned, David, already that there are 1,800-some references. I didn't remember the number, but it's a large number. I have over 100 pages of references. So the book looks big, but it's actually a very easy book to read. I wanted to write it on a level where any high school student could understand it. It's not difficult to understand, but every word is documented. And I did that so that anyone who questioned some of the facts that I was sharing in that book could look up that fact in the back. It's easily referenced, so each one is numbered in a way that's very easy to check it out. You look in the back, there's the study. You can go to the Internet. You can go to Medline, our government database. You can read the full abstract there for free for virtually all the studies. And so, you know, there is a way to research and confirm that what I'm sharing in that book is truth. And so I did it in that way for that purpose.
So, Tim, we've been talking about the book. If someone wants to pick up a copy, is there an easy way to do it?
Yeah, Amazon, of course, does carry the book. It can be obtained from any bookstore, wholesaler, and our distributor do make those things available. But the easiest way I find for most folks is go to Amazon and order the book.
America Fooled. Dr. Timothy Scott. Tim, let's come back to the subject at hand. We're speaking about physicians being fooled, and you actually, I thought, took pains to help readers see early on in the book that you really are not against physicians. You're actually, you know, pretty positive about, you know, how you see the average medical practitioner in America, even though you feel they've gotten a lot wrong when it comes to mental health issues.
That's right, and I've had friends who I've had these discussions with, and boy, they, you know, I think they're convinced, but it's almost like they don't want to be convinced. Here's the problem, and I put a note at the beginning of the book. I decided I better do this. I would give these lectures on FDA approval of drugs, on the research design behind some of these studies, and I would find in an average classroom I would have 5, 6, 7, 8 students who are on these drugs. And so when the lecture is done, I would be having students come to the front and voicing anger, not at me, but at their physicians, saying, why would they put me on these drugs with these particular health effects? They never told me any of this, etc. And I would share the following. I say, listen, you have to understand, the average physician knows far more than I know about all kinds of issues. But they have a very different life. They come to work and they see patients all day long. They have to know about all kinds of things. They have to stay up with all kinds of issues. I come in, I lecture generally about 2 hours a day in the morning, and then I have 8 hours to sit in my office with a computer, order journals, have the library bring me things, and do research. And so, and I am so narrow. I focus on one issue here. And so I've given my life in the last few years to one issue. Physicians cannot do that. Not everyone who walks into their office is going to have just one condition. They're going to have all kinds of conditions. And so for the average physician, this is not meant as a put-down on physicians. It's just the fact that they have to know a lot about a lot of things. I don't. I can be focused on one issue. And so as I learned about this issue and became knowledgeable about this issue and was shocked that the studies in this area are not like other medical studies. They're truly different. They're truly unique. It really upset me. You mentioned early sometimes folks are angry. Well, I was angry that people don't know. I don't think the anger comes out in the book, but it does upset me that people are taking these drugs. And, of course, what it also does, it takes our eyes off what does work. There are ways to have good mental health without doing these drugs. What a lot of people don't know, taking antipsychotics, for example, not only are they more likely to get diabetes, not only are they more likely to get tardive dyskinesia, which is a movement disorder that's permanent, they are going to have a shorter life, and if they develop what we call schizophrenia in America, it will be something they die with. They will be told by their physician that once they get schizophrenia, it's a permanent condition. That's not what they're told if they're in many other countries of the world. And so consequently, they go on these drugs and they begin having health problems. They have a suicide rate that jumps up. And, you know, it just ruins people's lives. It ruins families' lives. So it would be wrong for me not to be upset about that. So that's the purpose of the book. That's why I wanted people to have this information. I want everyone who has a family member, a friend, a loved one, who has depression, who has schizophrenia, to get the book. And again, I don't make a dime, but I want them to have that information. I would love folks to give copies to their physicians so that physicians can read this information and learn more about the subject.
You know, for many years, Dr. Scott, and even on this show, we've had people who have a similar philosophy as you who've talked about non-drug therapies for depression, and we want to talk more about that today because you've got a lot of great information pulled together. But I'll just be honest with you, from my perspective, training in internal medicine and preventive medicine, I had never really heard much hope out there for people who had, you know, what we might label as paranoid schizophrenia. You know, these people, you know, historically were put in institutions. You know, more recently, over several decades, we've been giving them these, you know, powerful, what we call major tranquilizers. And many of them kind of walk around in a zombie-like state.
That's correct.
You know, others, you know, have these side effects, like you mentioned. I've seen people with these terrible tardive dyskinesias, you mentioned. If many of our listeners don't know what those are, but if they've been in a nursing home or seen some older patients, you know, smacking their lips or grimacing their face, I mean, they've seen this, but they just didn't realize what it is. Can you give us a little, you know, you've got so much solid information here about why we should be questioning the prevailing attitudes, but I think as we're doing the show, it'd be nice just to start glimpsing some of the hope you see. Somebody is listening today. They've got someone with schizophrenia. I mean, what options are there beside these powerful medications?
Yeah, absolutely. You need to know something about some of the studies. You need to know something about the history. When we have what we call the moral treatment movement, that developed simply because the Tukes, a family in England, said, hey, you know, in our church we've lost this lady to the mental institution, and now they have her chained up. They have her sitting in her own filth. We've got to do something. And so they decided they'd set up their own home for those with problems. And they did it in a certain way. They said, we need a very disciplined. We don't let them stay in bed all day. We don't let them talk about all the problems all day. We want them to talk about health. We want them to garden. We want them to get involved. We want them to socialize. We want them to get dressed and so forth. And what they found was it changed people immediately. Amazing. Now, I take that back. It changed people immediately who had recently developed a problem. People who had had years of problems, boy, their mind had been so damaged that they were not very successful with those, and they were very honest about that. Well, that led to changes in America, and so we start seeing institutions in America doing the same thing, and we had equally wonderful results. I document those in the book. We find that in other countries, schizophrenia is typically a 2 or 3 year course. That's what's common. The person develops these real problems. The family takes them into their home, and they try to care for them and help them. They get the person back to normal, typically in 2 to 3 years. That's common. Why is it in America that schizophrenia is a lifelong problem and a death sentence? Why is it we have the worst treatment options? Why is it it's worse in America, though we have supposedly good medicine? And the answer is because in time we went with drugs. And the drugs do zombie people. They actually weaken the brain, and then they bring the health effects. And in the long run, they do far more harm than good. And so if you that's that issue. But if you look at depression, you could start looking at studies, for example, that the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Science at Duke University has done a number of studies that are wonderful studies. Again, some of these documented in the book. And they compared exercise versus antidepressants. And they, on a typical study, again, they did a lot of these studies, and they all have the basic same end result. They would have an exercise-only group. They would have an antidepressant-only group. And then they have an exercise and antidepressant group. And they started with the assumption, surely the exercise and antidepressant would have the greatest effect. That would be the best. I'll tell you the end of those studies, the end of results, in just a moment.
No, this is fascinating stuff. Where does lifestyle, medication, where do these interface? What's the best approach treatment-wise? Dr. Tim Scott's been looking at the literature for years. He's got a lot of exciting answers. I'm Dr. David DeRose. You're listening to American Indian Living. We're coming to you today by way of Life Talk Radio and Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network. Don't go away. There's a lot more to come.
American Indian Living will continue in a moment. If you have questions or comments about today's pre-recorded broadcast, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673.
America's veterans have served our country in both war and peace.
It's because of people like you that we are free.
My class was learning about war and how hard it is.
I wanted to do something to let them know how I feel.
Now there is a way to thank them for helping keep America free. Log on to thankyouveterans.org and type a personal message of thanks.
Dear Dad, I've recently come to understand how important your service to America was, and I just wanted to say thank you.
There are 26 million veterans living in America today, from World War II to Afghanistan and Iraq.
We carry our experiences inside. It's nice to have someone say thanks.
Let a veteran know you appreciate their service. Log on to thankyouveterans.org, a public service of Paralyzed Veterans of America.
This is the Duchess of York. What's really important in your life? It's your family and your friends. But isn't it also your health? People who are overweight or obese are at a greater risk for illnesses such as cancer. Check your BMI or body mass index. The lower the number, the lower the risk. So lose weight in a healthy way. You'll lower your BMI number. Now, isn't that important? Visit the website of the American Cancer Society at www.cancer.org. You and your family and friends will be glad you did.
Thank you for listening to American Indian Living. If you missed some of the discussion, CD copies of today's show are available. CDs of previous broadcasts are also available. Our email address is AmericanIndianLiving@lifetalk.net. CD requests and comments can also be communicated by phone at 1-800-775-4673. That's 1-800-775-4673. Stay with us for the second half of today's program.
You're listening to a pre-recorded broadcast of American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE, 1-800-775-4673. Here again is your host.
Welcome to our second half of today's edition of American Indian Living. I'm Dr. David DeRose. We're speaking today about some very good news for people with serious mental health concerns, mental health issues. We know this is something that whether you're living on a reservation, whether you're in an urban setting, whatever your background is, even if you're tuning in today, you're not a Native American, this is a topic that is just generating not only lots of interest, but as Dr. Tim Scott, our guest today, pointed out, it is consuming a huge chunk of our medication dollars in America. Tim, as we've been speaking about this subject, you were introducing some of the research that was done some time ago at Duke University looking at medications for depression alongside of exercise. Can you just kind of recap a little what that study was designed to do and then share with us the recent results?
Yeah, well, we've had so many studies on exercise and depression, over 1,000 as of 2000. And so lots of studies there. Well, they decided at Duke to say, well, let's compare exercise and let's compare it with antidepressants. But let's also have an exercise and antidepressant group. Well, what they found was after 16 weeks, the exercise-only group and the other groups, you couldn't really see any difference. There wasn't any marked difference. Mm. So they thought, well, that's interesting. Exercise turns out to be just as good as the drugs at 16 weeks. But then at 10 months, they found that the exercise-only group did far and away better. And, of course, you ask why. Why would an exercise-only group do far and away better? And the answer is, in reality, these drugs do take a toll on the body. They take a toll on the mind. And you do exercise only, there are all kinds of side benefits to exercise. There's a social aspect, you're achieving a goal, you feel good about yourself. And, of course, the body just needs exercise. And so for those kinds of reasons, exercise alone turned out to be the single most effective group out of the three that they were studying. Now, there's lots of other things we can do to overcome depression, but that gives you a feel for the fact that, hey, drugs are not the best answer.
You know, I think one of the things that our listeners are very interested in, even though you could, give us quite a bit of cutting-edge information on all the problems with our approach of chasing these neurotransmitters, the complexity of these issues, maybe it's worth just at least a few minutes of focus on that before we start speaking about some of the very positive information about non-drug treatments that are out there.
Yeah, sure. Let's do that. I would mention facts that I think people need to be aware of. For example, you know, we have less serotonin in our bodies as we age. You know, we have less estrogen in our bodies as we age. And there's less testosterone in our bodies as we age. Well, just like those hormones decline as we age, serotonin declines as we age. So if the theory were true, and the theory basically says the reason people get depressed is there's a lack of serotonin. In fact, related to that, I'll mention another fact in just a moment. There's a lack of serotonin in the brain, and consequently, if we increase the amount of serotonin, people will get over their depression. Well, if the theory were true, all old people should be depressed. If the theory were true, no young people should be depressed. And so when you have facts that run in the face of the theory, that are contrary to the theory, you don't throw out the facts. You say our theory must have problems with it, and the theory does. Let me tell you where the theory first came from. It came from a 1966 Lancet article. For your listeners who don't have a medical research background, I consider the Lancet just the top of medical journals. In our country, we often say the New England Journal is tops. But, you know, in my mind, the Lancet just can't be beat. It's the top British medical journal, in my opinion. And top in the world. I think they do wonderful research studies and they're well-designed studies. Well, in 1966, George Ashcroft, a medical researcher, a medical doctor, head of a medical research team in London, England, published an article that said, we think that there may be a lack of serotonin in the brains of those who are depressed. That's what started the ball rolling. That's what led to the pharmaceuticals saying, boy, here's a possibility of making money. And, of course, you have to remember, in 1966, very few people ever talked about depression. At that time, we talked about anxiety. People said, man, I'm just stressed out. And no one said, I'm just feeling so depressed. That was a rare comment. We were talking about being stressed out. I'm just anxious. And consequently, the top drugs were drugs to deal with anxiety. Things like Valium became the number one drug for a time. When those patents went off, the drug companies needed something else. And so depression became that something else. George Ashcroft and his team, they did the research on autopsied bodies, animal sacrifice studies, various things that they did to find out is a lack of serotonin the problem. In 1970, they announced, guess what, we were wrong. There does not appear to be any difference with those with a history of depression, those without that history of depression, in serotonin levels. In fact, we should never have even assumed so because serotonin is so easily influenced just on a minute-by-minute basis. I mean, as you eat, you lower serotonin. As you get a massage, you raise serotonin. So just if you really want to believe the serotonin theory, just get a massage. That's all you need. You don't need the pill. Exercise raises serotonin levels. So you might think, well, maybe that's why that exercise group did so well. Well, okay, take that if you want to. You're still avoiding the drugs by going that way, and it saves you money and protects your health. So the idea that it's serotonin, that's the basic idea in the theory, is flat wrong.
So what's unsettling about this, Tim, is we've got, you know, hundreds, thousands of listeners probably who have been on these serotonin-raising medications. They've said, look it, I was depressed. The doctor put me on this medication. They said it would take a while before I saw an effect. And indeed, you know, a month, 2 months, 3 months later, I was feeling much better. So they feel like their experience confirms the serotonin theory.
Yeah, my experience, let me address that in two ways. My experience has often been where someone will say to me, listen, I've been depressed for years. I got my Prozac, or I got my Zoloft, or Luvox, or Paxil, or Cerazone, or Lexapro, or Effexor. I got my drug, and I mean, I felt better that next day than I'd felt in years. And the point being that most physicians don't, at least a certain number of physicians obviously, do not stress. Now, if you read the drug insert carefully, the PI, the package insert, you will find that it says it'll take 6 weeks or 8 weeks to have an effect on your mind. And instead, they simply write that prescription. The person goes and they think, this is a magic pill. And they get home, and the next day they say, I've never felt this good. I've heard that story over and over, and of course, that is testimony itself to the fact that there is a placebo effect here. You mentioned other non-drug studies that you've had folks on talking about. Yes, we have all kinds of studies. Light exposure therapy, guess what? It works just as well as these drugs. Negative ion generators work just as well as these drugs, even when the generators are not plugged in. If the patients don't know it, they're part of a study like this, you can convince them that the generator is now putting out these negative ions, and they say, boy, I feel better. And they, on the test where we measure depression levels, and of course people need to understand, these are simply subjective questions. How are you feeling is how we determine whether or not you have depression. It's not like diabetes where we, you know, do a blood glucose test. It's not where we do a biopsy for cancer like we do for cancer, a PSA test for a prostate problem. It's not like that. We are simply asking, how are you doing? And they respond to some questions. And so if you can easily convince people, they will respond very positively. Acupuncture works just as well. Some studies better. Even when they use the needle, there's a way to do acupuncture made for studies like this where the needle never goes in, but the average person cannot tell that, and so they think they're being jabbed by a needle, and they work just as well as these drugs. St. John's wort works just as well, and many studies better, than these antidepressants, and it has fewer side effects. Okay, so that's one way we can address that. Another way, David, is just talk about, well, how can you get fooled like this? Well, regression towards the mean. When do you go see your physician? When you feel your best or when you feel your worst? And it's typically not when you're feeling great, it's when you're not feeling well.
Yep.
And consequently, time heals. And, of course, then the physician becomes convinced. Every patient who's come in saying, I just feel terrible, and they give this drug, and the next time they see that person, they don't say they feel terrible. They say they feel great. And so the physician becomes convinced, well, this is really working. The mere exposure effect, JAMA, their media kit notes that they average 70 pages of ads per issue. Well, guess what the number one type of ad is? If you combine, again, you can't say just antidepressants or just antipsychotics, but if you combine those two categories, that's their number one source of income. In fact, I really wanted to advertise this book to America's physicians. And so I contacted all the medical journals, New England Journal of Medicine, JAMA, and all the others. And for JAMA, they accepted my ad up to a point. The marketing people said, okay, and I was going to have the ad opposite the table's contents where it would be seen. And we already, had agreed on the price. And, I mean, they'd give me the price, and I said, fine. And, we were going down that road when I got a call at home from the editorial office. They had seen the ad. And they pulled it, and they said, they're the only ones really honest about this, so I don't mean this to be a strong criticism of the Journal of the American Medical Association, although in a way it is, of course. They said, listen, you have to recognize that's the number one source of our revenue. We cannot run this ad. That's biting the hand that feeds us. We just can't do it. And so they honestly admitted to me they could not share truth with physicians because of fear of what it does financially to their publication. And New England Journal of Medicine and Archives of General Psychiatry and all the others, they just sent me rejection letters. They can't run the ad. Not because the book is not carefully documented. It is not because it doesn't have endorsements from some of the world's leading medical researchers. I have physicians at Harvard and Yale and everywhere else that are endorsing this book. And it's not because it's not a carefully done book and that it has information in it that's wrong. It's because what it does to their ad revenue. And so we're dealing with a world in which, unfortunately, truth does not always win the day.
Well, let me just, be honest. Our listeners are used to, hearing my take on things, and I wouldn't have you on the show if I didn't think you had a lot of merit in what you're saying, Dr. Scott. I think you make a very good case that, this whole serotonin and dopamine, we speak of the psychoses, these neurotransmitter theories are not well documented. There are serious questions about how efficacious these medications are. But from my perspective, and, you can tell me if I haven't, really seen the light yet, it doesn't mean that just because there are these questions, there isn't still some truth in some of these associations, as difficult as it may be, is exercise, is bright light therapy, is it helping because it's raising serotonin levels? I mean, to me, some of this still seems plausible, at least. It's not like your book seem to convincingly refute the fact that these neurotransmitters may have some role in mental health. But what it really does, to me at least, is says, look at the theoretical basis for the medication research is tenuous. It's not ironclad. On top of it, we've got all these side effects from the drugs. On top of that, we've got natural things that work just as well, if not better. Why would you want to go in that direction of the medications? I mean, at least that's how I put the data together. Now, do you feel I'm missing a big piece of what you're trying to communicate in America Fooled?
Well, okay. Yeah, let me address some of that as soon as we come back, David.
We're going to do that, and when we come back, we're going to also give Dr. Scott an opportunity to give his top natural therapies that can help mental health. You don't want to miss it. If you got to go away, pick up a copy of the book, America Fooled. We've got more with Dr. Tim Scott on today's edition of American Indian Living. Stay with us. You're listening on Native Voice One and Life Talk Radio. I'm Dr. DeRose.
Today's broadcast has been pre-recorded. However, if you have questions about today's show or would like further information, please call 1-800-775-HOPE. That's 1-800-775-4673. We'll be right back after this.
Today's American Indian Living radio program is sponsored in part by Weimar Center of Health and Education. Located in the foothills of Northern California's Sierra Mountains, Weimar is home to the Residential New Start Lifestyle Program that helps people of all races address diabetes, heart disease, obesity, and related conditions. To further assist Native Americans with their health, Weimar produces a wealth of free resources that can be accessed on their website at newstartclub.com. To learn more about how Weimar can change your life, you can call 1-800-525-9192. The number again is 1-800-525-9192. Or you can access them on the web at newstartclub.com. Again, that's newstartclub.com.
Canned vegetables. Bring them
over here. Hey, Duncan, get over here. Need you to stay with me and your brother, okay?
I am.
Well, closer. Come on, help me out here, buddy. Excuse me. Duncan, you're blocking me out.
I want some bologna.
Not today.
But I want them.
Sorry. Duncan!
I want to put the number thing.
Too bad.
Mommy would let me.
Okay, well, she's not here, okay? She's gone, and she's not coming back, and you're just going to have to deal with it like the rest of us, okay? Duncan.
On May 29th, Michelle Jimenez was killed by a drunk driver. She left behind her husband and four children. Drinking and driving is a crime that kills abruptly, but the pain lasts forever. Friends don't let friends drive drunk. A message from the U.S. Department of Transportation, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to a pre-recorded broadcast of American Indian Living. Your comments and questions are welcome. Call now at 1-800-775-HOPE. 1-800-775-4673. Here again is your host.
Welcome to our final segment of American Indian Living today. I'm Dr. David DeRose. Dr. Tim Scott has been walking us through some of the challenges with mental health treatment. He's the author of the book America Fooled. America Fooled by Dr. Tim Scott, available wherever fine books are sold, Amazon.com and elsewhere. Tim, I tried to give a synthesis before we stepped away for our break of my take on your book, that it's definitely, you know, raising concerns about the whole neurotransmitter hypothesis and our treatment approaches. But I asked the question, really, I mean, is it still possible that by raising serotonin or dopamine in some of these conditions, we may be helping people? And that's how some of these natural therapies work. How do you look at that whole topic?
Yeah, well, you know, I will stress, first of all, that, you know, when the Thorazine came out, the articles that appeared in Life and elsewhere said, boy, it just changed mental institutions, things got better. In reality, that's not true. Thorazine and the other antipsychotics really do zombie people. And so some of the outbursts, some of the difficult behavior, if you have a family member knocking on neighbors' doors, in the middle of the night. You want to do something. You're desperate, and these drugs will control behavior. But at what price is the question? They really have serious price. To go back to the basic issue of what causes the problem, is it serotonin? We have to recognize not only was Ashcroft's research important to know about, just recognize our limited knowledge of the brain. Our first neurotransmitter, neurotransmitter is any substance that transmits nerve impulses across the synapse, was acetylcholine, discovered back in 1921. That's the first one. The next one was norepinephrine, discovered in 46. So recognize these are fairly recent discoveries. Serotonin was 48, GABA 1950, dopamine 57, and so forth. Endorphin was 1973. So you get the idea. When these drugs began to be researched, we only had five neurotransmitters. Well, guess what? In 2005, we had identified over 200 neurotransmitters. The reason that all the theories center around serotonin, norepinephrine, GABA, dopamine, endorphin is because those are our first ones, not because those are the magic pills, the magic hormones. That's not it at all. It's just that those are the ones we identified first. In fact, the brain is far more complicated. In fact, you start talking about serotonin. We have identified now over 15 different types of serotonin receptors in the brain. So it's not just that there's all these various kinds of neurotransmitters. Everyone reacts in different ways with different receptors in the brain. The whole thing is so complicated to suggest that we have this figured out. In fact, I like folks to ask their physician just to test their knowledge. Do it in a way that's not confronting. Do it in a way that's kind. But ask basic questions like, how do you measure serotonin levels? I think most folks who are in practicing physicians in private practice wouldn't have a clue. Ask them where serotonin is manufactured. I think most of them think it's in the brain. In fact, a little bit's made in the brain. Most is made in the intestine. So just so they'll learn that this is a subject that the average American physician has very little knowledge about, I think it's important that they find that out. And then they, as they read the book, they find out what really are the answers, what does help. And that's what we really need to talk about now, David.
Definitely, definitely, Tim. What can someone do? Maybe their doctor has just taken them off an antidepressant. Maybe they're on one. They're trying to get off at work with their physician. We're surely not telling people just to throw away their medicines.
Yeah, I think it's very important to note that you don't just go cold turkey. Now, listen, maybe two out of three, three out of four who do so without any serious problems. But too many people do have serious problems. It is like withdrawal from alcohol. It can have a serious effect. If you've had a patient that comes in and has a history of alcoholism and you get them off cold turkey, man, they can have some real serious psychosis kind of events. It can hit them hard. And the same thing is true with these drugs, that a certain percentage of patients, when they withdraw, have very serious side effects. And so it needs to be something you do slowly. Joseph Glenn Mullen, Harvard Medical School professor, he's written a book just on this issue. How do I slowly wean myself off my antidepressants? And so you might want to consult that. But the idea is you have to do it slowly. You have to do it carefully if you want to avoid that risk. Now, what can you do? What should you do? And here are the kind of things that I address in the book. And that I deal when I'm dealing with people who have depression, I want to cover. I want to find out, for example, are they violating their values? It would be nice to pretend that doesn't have any effect on depression, but I can tell you, when I'm dealing with someone who's involved in an adulterous relationship, they have more stress. And guess what? Stress at high levels can lead to depression, and it does. If I'm dealing with a patient that has an anger problem, they throw things, they get angry, they yell at their mother, they yell at their husband, then I want to help them get that under control because, you know, it may be what they want to do when they get angry is to have these outbursts. But do they feel better about themselves? No, they feel worse about themselves. They know they're not behaving as a human should behave. They know that. I want to deal with their discipline level. I know that surveys of Americans find that 25% say that procrastination is a significant problem in their lives. If you are late to work every day, you don't get positive vibes from your boss. You get negative criticism. And so we need to deal with those kinds of things. I know that people who are more disciplined are less likely to procrastinate. are more likely to make, I'm talking about research studies, more likely to make better grades, more likely to be admitted to the best schools, more likely to get better jobs, have fewer marriage problems. I mean, you just go down the list. Life is better. So that's a practical thing to address. I want to talk about where is their focus. If they are focused on themselves, that is a problem. Why is it anorexia nervosa is more common among females than males? Why is it more common now than it was in the earlier time in our country's history? Well, as we had these teen magazines that talked about this perfect body, and these girls are looking at these, they begin to develop anorexia at higher levels. And so we find it a very uncommon problem in some countries, some cultures, and a very high problem in other cultures. And my bottom line here is that, listen, life is not about ourselves. I love what is now the best-selling book in our country's history, other than the Bible, Rick Warren's The Purpose-Driven Life. And he says basically in that book, life is not about you. It's not about you. Well, I find a lot of patients, they get angry when they don't get their way. They're unhappy when things don't go just as they want them to go. And as people get out of themselves and get invested in the lives of other people, I'm in Texas, and I'm very pleased to say this morning, my son-in-law and my daughter, they headed to Houston with a generator and gasoline. They're going to go help out someone in Houston. It's going to cost them money. It's going to cost them time. It's going to cost them trouble. But it's the right thing, and they will feel better about themselves for doing so than for not doing so. It's the right thing to do. I would deal with, are you a critical person or a generous person? Are you a person who always tries to look good? Or are you willing to be open? You know, all these kinds of things are important. And it's why, because our country is so self-centered, that we are seeing a teenager in our country five times more likely than a teenager in Great Britain to receive an antidepressant, 30 times more likely than a teenager in South Korea to receive an antidepressant, 40 times more likely than a teenager in Taiwan to receive an antidepressant. And my question is, if it's a biochemical problem, why is it that our kids are far more likely to have the problem than kids in other countries? Why is it in our country that women are far more likely to have the problem than men? Why is it that little children under five are now being prescribed these drugs freely? If it's a biochemical problem, they should be. It's like diabetes. I would not withhold insulin from a four-year-old with diabetes. But if it's a biochemical problem, I very often find people who think it is a biochemical problem, and when I mention how many young children are receiving these drugs, they say, well, that's wrong. Well, why is it wrong? If it's a biochemical problem that sticks with these drugs, it should be done, but it's not. And so drugging these kids, and of course that's a particular concern because long-term use, these are the kids who are more likely to develop diabetes. These are the kids who are more likely to have liver damage. In fact, it's interesting. I'd ask your patients to look at their package insert, your listeners, I guess, in this case, David, their package insert, the PI that comes with the drug, and just look at what it says. For example, if you look at what it says in the Prozac insert, only 5 to 6 weeks on Prozac, 10% of subjects have tremors. Only 6 to 8 weeks on Zoloft, 11% of the sample gets tremors. That's an indication of what's going to happen with long-term use, serious health effects that we need to be sharing with.
Dr. Tim Scott, I mean, you've been sharing with us a lot of eye-opening material. And for my listeners, I mean, you've been listening and you've been saying, you know what, we as First Nation peoples have known this all along. You know, community, our values, taking care of one another. I mean, this is part of what makes us who we are. It's part of the Optimal Program for Mental Health. Dr. Tim Scott, just a couple of seconds. You got any final words for our listeners?
Well, again, I would encourage them if they have someone they know about that is on these drugs to read the book. It's not because I'm making money on it, but I want people to have the information. It's important. And they can do a great
job Dr. Scott,
by doing so.
Thank you so much. America Fooled, Dr. Tim Scott. It can make a difference in your life and in your community. I'm Dr. DeRose.
This is Life Talk Radio.